The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Real Recognition Radio, a program designed to promote a positive work environment. Your hosts are Roy Saunderson and S. Max Brown. In this hour, you will be motivated to motivate, increase morale, productivity, loyalty, and reduce turnover. Learn how some companies get it while others don't. Now, here are your hosts, Roy and Max.
Welcome to Rideau's Real Recognition Radio, the show that's all about building relationships, inspiring greatness, and creating a workplace where people can thrive. I'm Max Brown, along with my colleague and friend Roy Saunderson, and we're both from Rideau's Recognition Institute. Roy, we say it a lot, but I have a really good feeling about what we're about to talk about today.
I know. I when I think about leadership, we've sometimes heard complete different lines of thought on the show. And when you're talking about greatness, I think some people tend to think of a kind of a pedestal of a kind of a guru status above all. But I think we're going to look at greatness in a completely different way today.
Well, I think so too. And of course, our guest today, David Lappin, is the author of Lead by Greatness, and he's the CEO of Lappin Consulting International. For context and for our listeners, David's worked alongside some of South Africa's greatest business leaders who, together with Nelson Mandela and his government, transformed the country from apartheid to a vibrant, new democratic economy. He continued his groundbreaking work around the world, building self-driven, high-performing teams in environments of complex diversity. And he was the founder of the South African Institute of Business Ethics, architect of the Code of Ethics for the King Commission on Corporate Governance, and the Institute of Directors for South Africa. David, we are delighted to have you on the show. We review and talk to a lot of guests, but I really, really enjoyed the depth of your book and the message that you bring.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that, and wonderful to be on your show with both of you.
Well, we are delighted. And, in fact, if you wouldn't mind, just give us some context to our listeners. What does the title of your book, Lead by Greatness, mean to you, and perhaps why did you write this book?
Yeah, a great question. The idea of leading by greatness was that we are really the only tool of our own leadership. There are no other tools. You've got your personality, you've got your character, you've got who you are. And the more you can hone the greatness of who you are, and if you speak to the parents of any children, you'll learn pretty quickly that just about everybody's great, certainly in the eyes of someone. And if our parents think we're great, they probably see something great in each of us, and there is something great in each of us. And how do we access that, and how do we use that to inspire the people around us?
Mm-hmm. Boy, that is the challenge, isn't it? And easier said than done sometimes.
Absolutely, and we talk about some of the challenges and difficulties and provide methodology. I think that was the really important part. It's not just to give a theory, but to say, hey, this is how you do it. We've tried this, we've researched it, and we've applied it, and we've watched people grow and deliver results by adopting these methodologies of self-development.
Well, and specifically, what I really appreciate is that you describe a lot of different leaders in this book, and leaders that are doing a great job. Can you tell us about a few of them and what they're doing that allows them to excel?
Yes, absolutely. And to me, this has been one of the most humbling experiences of our work, is just seeing how exceptional so many people are, especially now that business is getting such a bad rap in the media. It's just so amazing when you come across the people who are truly sustainably successful and what exceptional human beings they are just as people. And the level of humility they have, the level of understanding of the greatness of the people around them and how their achievements aren't their their own. I think that some of the important elements are some of the eight character traits that I work through in Lead by Greatness. That first one, that sense of destiny, is amazing. That sense of I'm here to do something big and bold in the world. I'm here to do something that maybe others can't do as well. I know what that is. I know what my purpose is, and I'm steadfast to it. But I think even more important than that is articulating and understanding the purpose of the organization they lead. What are we here to do as an organization, and what are we not here to do? And how do we stay focused on that and not get sucked into the fads? One of our exceptional clients at the moment is PNC Bank, for example. Just led by a man, Jim Rohr, who kept the bank out of trouble right through the difficult times of 2008 and subsequently. And they didn't get involved in any of what was going on because they were absolutely steadfast to what they believed was the purpose of their organization and what they're here to do.
Boy, easier, like we mentioned before, that some of these times a company will start with the right intentions, and you talk about this as well, but that they lose that soul, if you will. And I want to talk about that more later as well, but I think that's what you were kind of alluding to just now, wasn't it?
Yes, what I call the corporate soul or the corporate spirit or whatever you wish to call it is perhaps the most underrated asset in any organization. It's not an expensive asset. It's a relatively easy asset to build and to access, and it is so powerful in its capacity to deliver results.
Boy, I couldn't agree more. I also really enjoyed this connection you made between greatness of character and business achievement. Can you elaborate on that? And I think at first glance, people will kind of think, yeah, well, that makes sense, but you took it deeper.
You see, I think what's important to understand that perhaps the biggest shift that has resulted from technology and globalization is that almost anything you manufacture or deliver as a product or service can be and probably is being commoditized. Even if you're innovative, even if you invent something new, it's a matter of minutes or hours before it's being commoditized, produced somewhere cheaper and delivered faster. And therefore, the competitive advantage of organizations is not going to be anymore just in the products they make. It's really going to be in the innovative powers of the people, the continuously innovative powers of the people, and this idea of the corporate spirit and the corporate soul. That means that the main differentiator is a people issue, whereas until very recently, the differentiator was in product or in technology or in the service you provided. That's no longer a differentiator. So you're differentiating yourself with your people and how they're able to inspire one another and how they can inspire customers, because people want to be inspired. Customers want to be inspired. And that means you're going to need leaders. If your differentiator is people, then leadership character is going to be the driver of that differentiation.
Well, I do believe that. In fact, it reminds me of the former Secretary of Labor under Clinton's administration, Robert Reich, said something very similar, saying, you know, we can all buy the computer. We can all, I mean, even a kid can buy an $800 computer and create a multi-million dollar business. The differentiator is essentially what you just said. It's the people and how we engage that as the most important thing we can do. And yeah, you took it a step further too there, and I quoted you yesterday on Twitter, but I don't remember the exact quote, but saying, you know, that people are not our most important asset. They manage the assets, and we have to engage those people to manage the assets.
Yes, I think it's a travesty when we call people an asset. An asset is something a manager acts on. Person is somebody who acts on assets. And I think we disempower people when we even refer to them as assets. They are the people who lead and manage assets. And that's so crucial. It's interesting that the LRN organization, Dov Seidman, just came out with the HOW report showing that 84% of employees across the world, not just in North America, 84% of employees feel coerced. Only 4% of employees feel inspired. So there's a massive opportunity to access people's human energy and use that to differentiate an organization.
Boy, and I've always find the irony of that statement so true. You know, we call them an asset, but we count them in the liability column.
Yes, and when we get into difficult times, the first thing we do is cut them out. Why would you get rid of an asset
exactly.
if things are tough?
Exactly.
So let's be honest. The employee knows that you don't mean it. And let's be honest and just say, I've often said at the end of the day, if you went to any manager of a large business and you said, I've got a way that you could continue growing and doing exceptionally well without having to employ one person, it could all be done by technology. Are you interested? They would all say yes.
Yeah, that's right.
Be honest
that's right.
and say, people are a nuisance, but you need them, so let's try and figure them out. Or else, understand the value of people and access that value and give them the freedom and the power to be able to unleash it.
Boy, I couldn't agree more. And I really appreciate this message because of that, that you're not just playing with words, you're actually saying that, no, we should really understand the meaning of what we're talking about here. And if I could, I'd like to quote from your book, because I appreciated this, talking about that corporate soul and coming back to that for a moment, that exponential growth and innovation are powered by talented people who are also infused with a driving sense of higher purpose and a sense of almost divine destiny, the foundation on which they provide a corporate soul for their organizations. Success seems to have blinded some otherwise amazing companies, as we alluded to earlier, that end up losing their way. Can you tell us about a company that perhaps has worked hard to maintain their corporate soul?
Yes, so there's surprisingly many of them, and the interesting thing is they're right in the headlines because they do so well. Organizations,
yes.
Corporate soul, just do well. And if you take the Starbucks story, and what's really interesting was Howard Schultz's departure from hands-on management, you remember some years ago,
yes.
when he became executive chairman, and the company got into a spiral, and you remember, I think I mentioned it in the book, that Schultz then sent out a letter to all of his staff and said, Starbucks has lost its soul.
Yeah.
And he came back as CEO to give it back its soul. And within months, the company was soaring and has been consistent. Southwest Airlines under Herb Keller, and even after his tenure, it still manages to retain that soul that he infused into it. Just consistent profits in an industry that has been tormented by turbulence. And yet Southwest Airlines hasn't missed a year of profit. They've got a corporate soul, and they protect it absolutely rigorously. The Keller has said, the reason that other people can't copy us is because we invest as much in our corporate spirit as we do in our other assets. It's as important. And other people think that your corporate soul or your corporate spirit is something which just happens.
Yes.
It doesn't happen. You know, I say often that culture is like a garden. It will grow in any event. If you nurture it, you'll grow beautiful flowers. And if you ignore it, you'll grow weeds.
Boy, it is so, so true. And the question is, how do you foster and maintain it? You know, you alluded to Simon Sinek's book on the why. And in his book, it actually gives an example of Walmart, who used to have a corporate soul in terms of how they treat their people and their communities, based from Sam Walton. But the exposure to quarterly reports and trying to grow and trying to prove to investors that they could continue to grow has become a focus not on the corporate soul, but rather on process and production and output. And in doing so, he suggests that some of that soul has been eroded. And when legislators used to try to make laws to bring Walmart in, now they're making laws to keep them out. And I thought that was an interesting comment when I thought about the context you brought here.
Yes, that's true. I don't fully agree with Simon on Walmart. I think there's an effort in Walmart now in the last 2 years under its new leadership to reinvigorate the soul, but it's very hard to turn a company around. Schultz did it quickly because there wasn't much time. He wasn't out for long, and he recognized, spotted it really quickly. I think Walmart is making an effort, certainly internally. They're being plagued by all sorts of difficulties, but that is a great example of a large company that for a period of time just lost it. JCPenney's lost its way. And the strategic blunders that they went through in the last little while. Netflix, great example of a company that had corporate soul. And one strategic blunder, they just lost direction at one point. They became a little greedy and lost their soul in an instant and haven't recovered it yet. They lost two-thirds of their value in 3 months, and they haven't recovered it over a year later.
It's very, very difficult, and it's not to point fingers and make fun. It's actually a warning to all of us, because I mean, I think this is something that we all could fall short in, and so it's a timely discussion for everyone.
Absolutely, and to understand the bottom line value, I think part of my decision,
yes,
we might come onto it later, but part of my decision to earn my living this way rather than practicing as a rabbi, which is the way I was trained, is if people were paying me, I wanted them to be paying me for tangible value I gave them. I didn't want to charge people for intangibles. And this work that we're talking about, this work of building corporate soul and corporate spirit and building leadership greatness, our clients certainly see the massive value added in a very bottom line sense, and so I feel much more comfortable about accepting payment for it.
Well, I'm delighted to have you on the show. We do have to take a quick break, but when we come back, we'll continue this conversation with David Lappin. You're listening to Rideau's Real Recognition Radio on the Voice America Business Channel. Please stay tuned. We'll be right back.
When it comes to business,
you'll find the experts here.
Voice America Business Network. Relationships are the core of great businesses. Your employees are critical to the success of your business. Rideau helps you build positive relationships with your people. Rideau helps you inspire greatness in your people. We do it through the power of recognition and rewards. Rideau's clients are Intel, RBC Financial, Boeing, and Liberty Mutual. We're committed to our clients and our people. Together, Rideau and our clients create better workplaces, better businesses, and ultimately, a better world. Become a Rideau client. Find us at rideau.com. Rideau is the proud sponsor of Real Recognition Radio.
How do you become one of the best companies to work for? By appreciating people for who they are and recognizing them for what they do. That's real recognition. 82% of employees say that recognition or praise they receive at work motivates them to improve their performance. And companies who recognize their people outperform companies that don't by 30 to 40%. Those are real results. Become one of the best companies to work for. The Recognition Management Institute can help you get the results you need. For more information, visit realrecognition.com. That's realrecognition.com.
Technology is changing the way we live our lives and how we do business. On CIO Talk Radio, we talk about the benefits of technology and the great things it allows us to do, as well as its risks. Heard every Wednesday at 9 a.m. Central, 7 a.m. Pacific, Sunjo Gall interviews business leaders and other experts that are shaping the way we use technology. To learn more about the show, visit www.ciotalkradio.com. Keep up with the changing world of technology and listen to CIO Talk Radio with Sunjo Gall. Listen in every Wednesday at 9 a.m. Central, 7 a.m. Pacific, right here on Voice America Business.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Real Recognition Radio with Roy Saunderson and S. Max Brown. This is what recognition is all about, getting real results in the workplace through meaningful recognition solutions. Now, let's get back to the program. Here are Roy and Max.
Welcome back to Rideau's Real Recognition Radio. I'm Roy Saunderson, along with my colleague Max Brown, and our guest today, David Lappin, author of Lead by Greatness. And I'm just curious there, David, you certainly mentioned that your role as a rabbi, and as you've gotten into the consulting and business world, how do you see those two experiences of your life, those two different perspectives coming together to help you in your work with leaders and organizations?
It's an interesting one, Roy, and I mentioned in the book that my background is both going right into the family tradition, both in spiritual teaching and in business. I never really wanted to earn my living, as I mentioned earlier, by selling spirituality and the things that I believe in so dearly, and so decided to earn my living in business instead. And after about 8 or 9 years in business, I started to search for ways to integrate them. I was actually living two lives at that time. I had a business life that was very active with a large international commodity trading company, and I was teaching spirituality and the Jewish religion at the same time. So I thought to myself, is there a way of integrating it? And at that time, became aware of the idea that we spoke about a few minutes ago, that with the world becoming increasingly commoditized, and with competitive advantage residing far more in the intangibles of a business, the people, the what I call in the book the corporate soul of an organization, being able to offer a customer something they can't get anywhere else. But I'm not talking about an object. I'm not talking about a thing, because we can get things anywhere now. But to be able to give a customer the dignity and the recognition and the sense of value that all of us quest, that was really going to differentiate businesses. And I thought if we could find a teachable way to be able to enable business leaders to do what Steve Jobs did with Apple and what Howard Schultz did with Starbucks and Herb Keller did with Southwest Airlines, on bigger or smaller levels, can we enable people to access the intangibles of a business and its offering and build that into competitive advantage? And that's what I've really dedicated the last 20 years of my life to.
That's wonderful. Now, you also alluded to, you know, obviously Starbucks and the reference that of having lost its soul. How do companies lose their corporate soul?
It's so easy, Roy. It's just when you submit to imitation, when you start getting afraid that you're losing it, you're seeing your competitors doing things that you're not and doing very well, and you believe that you ought to imitate them. So that would be one of the things that starts happening, and you start imitating instead of innovating authentically from who you really are. And that's the beginning of the slippery slide. It's interesting. For example, Apple has just announced that they're coming out with a small version of the iPad to compete with Kindle and some of the other tablets that are out. And I'm beginning to wonder, is this the first time in decades that Apple has imitated? Is this the very first time that Apple is responding to competitive threat instead of leading the way? And if it is, what does it mean for the future of the organization? So imitation is the first thing that goes wrong. And the second is greed. When you're onto a good thing and you start becoming numbers focused. And we often talk about the difference between driving your company by numbers or measuring it by numbers. And you have to measure it by numbers. There's no other way to measure anything other than with numbers. And you've got to be vigilant about those numbers, watching them all the time. But the conversations in your organization should not be about numbers. The conversation should be about the things that generate those numbers, and that's not the operation. That's what I call the soul of the organization. Are we really accessing the deep needs of our customers and delivering in a way that is authentic to who we are?
Ah, so true, so true. And, you know, David, I know you certainly refer to authors like Daniel Pink, who we've had on the show before, Simon Sinek and Chip Conley, also who we've had on the show, and others who have volumes of research showing that, and your quote is, showing that it isn't the promise of a pay raise or promotion that binds people into extraordinary synchronized teams. As important as tangible recognition is, that isn't what inspires people to do the spectacular. Tangible rewards may temporarily motivate, but it cannot inspire. Inspiration is a spiritual idea, and people are only truly inspired at a spiritual or soul level. Inspired people put the needs of others before their own interests and give of themselves in heroic ways that exceed anything imaginable in an uninspired environment. So, David, how do you get that type of inspiration to reside and come into an organization?
It's so interesting. Ideally, it should start at the top. You need an inspired CEO and inspired leader. Of course, you can do it in a team. You can have a CEO of a team within a large organization, whether he has the title of CEO or some different title, it doesn't matter. But it's the leader. It's the person at the top who has this passionate belief in something bigger, in something more worthwhile, in something that really matters to the world and to the future of the world and to the people that we serve. And that that is so infectious. Inspiration is infectious. I often say engagement, which is something that since the Gallup organization and Marcus Buckingham have made us really aware of the value of engagement, engagement has its limitations. It's an entry-level requirement. You need to have people who are engaged, but engagement isn't infectious. You can have an individual who's working in a very engaged way, but it doesn't infect others. Inspiration is infectious. Inspiration affects the people around you because it comes from your soul. And the energy you put out is so enormous. And you know what it's like. You walk into a room and you can immediately see. There can be 50 people in the room. And you immediately see who the people are of high energy. Even if they're not running around and very active, they're just talking quietly. You see the energy, and the energy comes from something very deep inside them. That's that soul issue. And you build it into an organization in exactly the same way. If the organization stands for something that matters and is willing to pay the price for it, is willing to take a knock, is willing to take some hard decisions, not just for profits, but for doing what they believe is core to who they are.
Absolutely. Now, in your work with leaders, do you find yourself having to coach them to identify that higher purpose and allow it to drive them?
Yes, occasionally you've got people who've just got it, whether they've worked on it themselves or they woke up one morning with it or in the shower, that it just suddenly struck them and they kind of know what they're here to do. But a lot of the of my time over the last 20 years has been working out how do you do it? What is the process? Is there a way to actually take people through a process that can help them identify and articulate what their purpose in the world is and how they can use their work or their organization as a vehicle to express that purpose? And we've kind of perfected it now. It's not a long process. It's quite easy, but it's very deep and very soul-searching. So, we do it in our workshops within organizations at senior levels, and we do it one-on-one in coaching.
Wonderful. Can you give us a small feel for how one can discover their personal purpose?
Yes, what it really boils down to is being able to say, if I've been put here to do something unique, then I must have been given a unique set of skills or backgrounds or what we call capabilities. And we take people through what we call an audit of their assets. Go through your life and just figure out, what have you got? And that means tangible assets and intangible assets. And sometimes a negative experience is an intangible asset. We had a banker in a workshop just the other day who lost his thumb in an accident. And he listed that as one of his assets because he said that gave him a power to empathize with people who are in pain that he never had before. He was quite intolerant of pain before, and this has become an asset. And that was beautiful to see how somebody saw a hardship become an asset. So we get people to identify their assets and then identify their capabilities, which is, what can I do with these assets? Nobody else has this particular portfolio of assets. They might overlap with other people, but nobody has the exact portfolio of experience, of life experience and assets that I have. What am I meant to be doing with that? And most importantly, for who? Who is what I call my primary beneficiary, the individual or group of individuals who would get the most value from what I can uniquely offer?
I know earlier on, David, you referred to organizations when they're trying to build this corporate spirit, trying to get that inspiration. You talked about paying the price. And I know that also kind of refers to individuals. And often people know what they need to do to be better. But again, looking at quoting from your book, you also write, people do what they know is wrong when they are not willing to pay the price for doing what's right. So how do individuals, leaders, those who are not necessarily in a strict leadership position, how do they get to the point where they're doing what's right, ready to pay the price?
This is the hardest part of life and leadership. We found that as I'm sure you have in your experience, that the people generally share good values. I haven't come across many people who believe that theft is good and lying is good and honesty is bad. People believe in good things. The real differentiator is when the going is tough, when I'm asked to make a sacrifice, how much sacrifice am I willing to make for the things I believe in? When that alarm clock goes off in the morning and I need to get up to do, whether it's my spiritual practice or to go to the gym or whatever it is, do I Do I default to another half an hour of sleep, or do I pay the price and get up? That's just a small example. And then the big examples. Are you a Johnson & Johnson back decades ago when they made their tough decisions about Tylenol, believing that that might be the end of the organization? When they sat in that boardroom and made that decision to take Tylenol off the shelves, they believed that might be the end of Johnson & Johnson. And they decided they had to do that because their purpose was saving lives, not causing deaths. And if there was even the slightest risk of causing deaths, they had no right to exist. And they made that tough decision, and it happened to be amazing for them. They grew and they developed, and it did a fortune for them. Or an Enron, who also had good values. If you look at the values of Enron, they're no worse than Johnson & Johnson's were.
Right.
They had a magnificent set of values, but when the opportunity to deliver to Wall Street what Wall Street was clamoring for and what we were all clamoring for, they were rated best place to work, and they were rated most innovative company, if you remember, year after year. And to be able to start believing your own hubris and becoming greedy, that's when we default. So in Lead by Greatness, we do teach people to recognize, when are you about to default? When are you about to slip into defensive mode, as I call it, and do what's expedient instead of do what you know is right for you? How do you recognize those signals and then pull yourself back into a clear vision of the purpose for which you were created and what I call your spiritual fingerprint, your set of value drivers? This is who I am. And is this action aligned or isn't it?
I think that's certainly some very key characteristics. I know I just saw a quote going through the Twitter sphere today that most goals that we should be establishing are mostly for the things we're not doing, not for the things that we are doing. And you're talking about sacrificing in order to be able to do what's right.
Yes, because when there isn't a sacrifice, it's so easy. Who doesn't want to do what's right when there isn't a sacrifice? All the judgments that we have to make for ourselves and the calls, the hard decisions, are about doing things that are inconvenient and uncomfortable, but right.
Well, thank you for putting us in a perspective that's going to challenge those beliefs. And we're going to take a short break here, David. So for our listeners, we invite you to come back on Rideau's Real Recognition Radio as we continue our wonderful discussion with David Lappin today and learn more about leading by greatness. For Rideau's Real Recognition Radio, I'm Roy Saunderson along with Max Brown.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
Hi, I'm Rebecca Costa, host of The Costa Report. Our guest this week is going to give us a rare look into the world of global hackers. The author of We Are Anonymous, Parmi Olson, will be here to tell us how hackers have assaulted Visa, PayPal, Sony Entertainment, even the Vatican. This is one program you don't want to miss. Join Parmi Olson this Tuesday at 6 a.m. and again at 6 p.m. on the Voice America Business Channel.
The next generation of employees is more sophisticated about recognition. They want to make a difference to their organizations, to their environment, and to their world. Rideau offers a full suite of recognition and reward solutions tailored to meet our clients' needs strategically, technologically, and globally. Rideau's clients are Intel, RBC Financial, Boeing, and Liberty Mutual. Together, Rideau and our clients create better workplaces, better businesses, and ultimately, a better world. Become a Rideau client. Find us at rideau.com. Rideau is the proud sponsor of Real Recognition Radio.
How do you become one of the best companies to work for? By appreciating people for who they are and recognizing them for what they do. That's real recognition. 82% of employees say that recognition or praise they receive at work motivates them to improve their performance. And companies who recognize their people outperform companies that don't by 30 to 40%. Those are real results. Become one of the best companies to work for. The Recognition Management Institute can help you get the results you need. For more information, visit realrecognition.com. That's realrecognition.com.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
You're listening to Real Recognition Radio with Roy Saunderson and S. Max Brown. This is what recognition is all about. getting real results in the workplace through meaningful recognition solutions. Now, let's get back to the program. Here are Roy and Max.
Welcome back to Rideau's Real Recognition Radio with Roy Saunders and, of course, myself, Max Brown, and our guest today, David Lappin, author of Lead by Greatness. And David, you and Roy were just concluding around, you know, how do we inspire people to do what's right? And I think that one of the things that struck me in your book was that you challenged the concept of Maslow's hierarchy of needs as the way we should create a business model. Even now, we're not even talking about guys before him who had thought about how we just treat people like machines and have no input whatsoever. But you even think that Maslow's hierarchy of needs missed the mark, and you have a different model or a different person we should be considering. Could you talk about that?
Yes, absolutely. Dr. Maslow made a really important contribution, particularly if you think of the time that he made it, in terms of saying to people, hey, that people work for something and they live for something higher than their basic needs. Where he was off the mark, and we'll talk about it, was saying we only get to those higher things when our basic needs are taken care of. Mm-hmm. And as long as we're focused on our basic needs, that's where our focus of attention is. That's where we want to survive, and that's what's really important to us. Later, when we've got money in our bank account, food on our tables, and we can pay our accounts, and then we want to get into the areas of love and recognition and self-actualization ultimately. Mm-hmm. And where I take issue even with people like Chip Conley and Daniel Pink, who I admire enormously, is Daniel Pink comes really far in saying management worked for the previous century, for last century, but it doesn't work anymore. Mm-hmm. And he's basically saying that we're beyond those lower levels in Maslow's hierarchy of needs. We're now operating at higher levels, and people want to work for self-actualization. My point is, it never worked. It never, ever worked. Maslow was wrong, and he admitted it at the end of his life when he wrote to Viktor Frankl, saying, my pyramid should have been inverted. But that never got into the textbooks. And the reason that he's wrong is it's true that until very recently, people were very concerned with the lower issues on Maslow's hierarchy, with one's physiological safety and security and income and revenue and so on. But that was because people had no choice. You had to survive, and there weren't that many jobs around. And if you lost your job, it was really serious. So people didn't have a lot of choice. But today, people have choice. Even then, 100 years ago or 200 years ago, if people would have had freedom of choice as far as employment was concerned, they would never have stuck around being abused by the corporations that used them. And that's the work of Viktor Frankl, who, while Maslow was living in New York during the Second World War, Viktor Frankl lost his entire family in concentration camps in Nazi Germany. Mm-hmm. And he was intrigued by the correlation between survival and the causes of survival. What caused? He found that weak people survived, young people died, old people survived. What was going on? He found that people that stole rations lived longer, and people who shared rations, the people who stole rations did not survive, and the people who shared rations lived longer. And he therefore realized that people's sense of meaning and their spiritual lives were a source of survival. It's not something that comes when your survival is secure. It's something that actually drives your survival. We all need it all the time, even if we're incredibly poor and struggling for the basics of life. And that's something that leaders need to understand, how important that sense of purpose, meaning, and higher purpose, and some kind of soul sense, of spiritual meaning in life, how vital that is to being inspired and to being willing to give of one's energy.
Mm-hmm. And you took this into the concept of being a hero, meaning that we do often see examples of sacrifice, even at great personal cost, because of that higher sense of meaning. They completely disregard their sense of security or their need for it in order to serve a bigger cause, and oftentimes even for total strangers, people they don't even know, and risking their lives to do so.
Yes, exactly, Max. And social scientists, since the time of Darwin, have been puzzled by what it is in human beings that drives that behavior. And they've tried all sorts of explanations. But in Lead by Greatness, I suggest we just wire differently from all other organisms. We have two operating systems. And they've always studied our operating system, which is our defensive, instinctual operating system. And that's why they use animals, rats, and all sorts of animals to try and do experiments with to see what drives behavior. But animals are driven only by instinct. We also have a heroic operating system that drives us to make sacrifices, to sublimate our own personal needs for a cause that we consider much greater than us.
Boy, it's so true. And so it's all happening at the same time. And as a leader, that should really impact the way we're thinking as well, because it's not just a matter of self-actualization after the fact, but this is all going on all the time. How do we touch these things, and how do we continue to go to a higher level of getting that interpersonal or that intrinsic motivation, if you will?
Absolutely, that's exactly right, and we need both of them. We need to be able to manage both of these operating systems in ourselves and in the people we lead.
Absolutely, I appreciate from the book you also wrote another piece that struck me, and I want to see if you can elaborate on it. You said the next big wave of growth will come from business whose leaders know how to convert low cost intangibles like culture into high bottom line returns. Now I know we've framed this a bit, but specifically the next big wave of growth in business is from these low cost intangibles like culture into high bottom returns. Can you talk about that a bit more?
Yes. Once we realize, Max, that our tangibles have been commoditized, and ultimately we're going to have to compete on price, other than by generating massive volume, we're not going to really grow from that. And even technology, I think that technology innovation will yield results in areas like alternative fuel and biomedics and perhaps robotics and areas like that. But we're not going to get a spreadsheet that's going to make us a whole lot more productive than we are at the moment. Technology in terms of its day-to-day usage has kind of run its course in terms of delivering exponential growth. So we need to see what is the next exponential growth driver. And for me, that's going to be the people who can access and inspire the innovative spirit in other people, people who can elevate people, uplift them, make them feel valued and recognized, not just your employees. I'm talking about your customers. That's going to be the true differentiator. You're going to want to work with a company that gives you a sense of being trusted and being a valuable human being, not an organization that simply delivers widgets to you.
Well, and to that point, you talk about measurement in the book, saying great leaders focus on the things that make a business successful, not the things that measure its success. And it seems like a lot of companies spend a lot of time measuring the things that measure its success. So it's almost like a rearview mirror of what they've done. But you're saying, no, the great leaders focus on the things that make the business successful.
Yes.
How is this different?
It's like driving to, you might be driving from Washington, D.C. to New York, and your eye is on your speedometer instead of on the road and your destination. You need to check your speedometer. You need to know how fast you're going. You need to check your gas gauge and levels and so on, and the temperature of your engine. You need to check these things and do something, correct them if they're wrong. But your eye is on your destination. Your eye is on where you're going, and more important, why you're going there. Because halfway down the road, you might find that the why no longer exists. The reason for which you were going doesn't exist anymore, and it's time to turn back. Your speedometer is not going to tell you that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's big. There's another piece that, and we only have like a couple minutes before we go to break, but the show is going fast. I wanted to be able to get a piece on how does one unleash their generosity, and why is this such an important aspect of business success?
Max, generosity to me is the core of business. You want to give customers more than they pay for. You want to give shareholders more than they invested. You want to return to creditors more than they lent you. You want to give employees something that is worth to them more than the time that they've given you and the skills and talents they've given you. We always want to give other people more. So generosity must be the most important value. And yet I've hardly ever seen a company that has generosity on its list of values. And when questioning leaders, I find the biggest reason, and this is in personal personal life just as much as it is in corporate life. We fear exploitation. My value is generosity, then employees are going to want higher salaries and shareholders are going to want bigger returns and so on. Customers will want cheaper prices. So we're afraid of being exploited. We see generosity as a weakness. And we've got to create cultures and environments where it's safe to be generous and people know for sure they're not going to be exploited. That unleashes enormous volumes of human energy.
Well, and part of it, to me, it seems like the part of it is just opening ourselves up to be a bit more vulnerable, and that generosity almost opens us to vulnerability, and that there's a fear there as well, isn't it? It's not just a matter of that the fear of exploitation is perhaps the reason we use, but it seems like it's deeper embedded than that, and that vulnerability might be a discomfort, so we use other reasons to cover it.
Yes, and that's where our egos come in. On a webinar yesterday, a business leader asked me about the fact that in the United States, we're taught that being vulnerable is weak, and showing vulnerability is weakness. So that's a really important flaw in our business culture that we need to overcome.
A lot of ways to think about this. David, we have to take that break. But when we come back, we want to get some final ideas and some final pieces on what this is all about for you. We're so glad you're here. For those Real Recognition Radio, this is Max Brown and Royce Anderson reminding you to keep it real. Stay tuned because we'll be right back.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
Dialogue is the single most powerful leadership tool we have to make a difference in the world. Leading Conversations with host Cheryl Esposito creates a place for that dialogue. Tune into the Voice America Business Channel every Friday as Cheryl hosts new conversations among leaders from around the world in business, government, art, economics, and social change. We'll explore big ideas and everyday actions and learn how their own leadership has led them to discover a newfound sense of possibility in the world. Leading Conversations with Cheryl Esposito, bringing big thinkers together in conversations that make a difference, right here on the Voice America Business Channel, every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time.
How do you become one of the best companies to work for? By appreciating people for who they are and recognizing them for what they do. That's real recognition. 82% of employees say that recognition or praise they receive at work motivates them to improve their performance. And companies who recognize their people outperform companies that don't by 30 to 40%. Those are real results. Become one of the best companies to work for. The Recognition Management Institute can help you get the results you need. For more information, visit realrecognition.com. That's realrecognition.com.
Relationships are the core of great businesses. Your employees are critical to the success of your business. Rideau helps you build positive relationships with your people. Rideau helps you inspire greatness in your people. We do it through the power of recognition and rewards. Rideau's clients are Intel, RBC Financial, Boeing, and Liberty Mutual. We're committed to our clients and our people. Together, Rideau and our clients create better workplaces, better businesses, and ultimately, a better world. Become a Rideau client. Find us at rideau.com. Rideau is the proud sponsor of Real Recognition Radio.
We're always talking business. Talk to an expert. Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Real Recognition Radio with Roy Saunderson and S. Max Brown. This is what recognition is all about, getting real results in the workplace through meaningful recognition solutions. Now, let's get back to the program. Here are Roy and Max.
Welcome back to Rideau's Real Recognition Radio. We're going to finish off our conversation today with David Lappin, our guest, and the author of Leading by Greatness. And let's see if we can get some final pointers before we have to close this great session today. David, I know a lot of people have a lot of the, you know, Y and probably the Z generation is going to be coming up around the corner there. A lot of people are concerned how to motivate them. They look at the differences, how they've been raised, and the expectations. What are some advice that you can give from your book on how to inspire the younger workers?
Yes, Roy, I think there are three really important points here. The one is the generation differences are happening faster and faster. So whereas a generation used to be 25 years, educators are now saying a generation is about 5 years. So there's a generation gap between siblings. An 18-year-old and a 13-year-old have a generation gap now. So that's one piece of it. The second piece of it is to recognize that although each generation is a little different, the real gap, the almost unbridgeable gap, happened with the generation that was born after 1983. 1983 being the time that the internet started becoming commercialized and available. And people born after 1983 actually cannot imagine the world without internet, and don't know how it actually functioned. A number of people, Mark Prensky was at the forefront of it, have done research into how kids born after 1983, people born after 1983, actually their brains are wired differently. They think differently. And he outlines and analyzes exactly what those differences are. That leads us to understand that these people will not one day be like us. When our parents said to us, you'll one day grow up to be a parent and then you'll understand what it's like, and they were right. We all grew up and became parents and then understood what they went through. Uh-huh. This generation isn't going to grow up to be like us. The difference between the new generation, and that means anybody born after 1983, and the older generation, is a cultural difference. It's a difference in the way you think and experience the world. And time isn't going to bridge it. Just as time doesn't turn an Asian person into a German person or a Hispanic person into a British person, it's not about time. So time is not going to turn these generation, these internet generation people, into linear thinkers. That isn't going to happen. And the third important point to bear in mind is there is a group of these young people who are entitled and who are selfish and self-centered. But we also need to realize that we raised them. We, their parents, raised them.
Right.
And we've got to take some accountability for that. It's not that they've got a sense of entitlement and they're difficult to manage. We raised such a generation. But having said all that, look at Google, and I just mention them because they're so well known in this area, but there are thousands of companies like it that are actually driven and powered by these young people who work through the night, who give of their best, who work incredibly hard, who are inspired and motivated. So I strongly believe our problem is not the young generation. They are the biggest opportunity we've ever had. Our problem are the people who are leading them.
Which comes back to this whole purpose of knowing the big purposes of an organization, that corporate soul, that spirit, and allowing these individuals, no matter what the age, to truly be inspired.
Yes, and to be able to have the humility to respect the fact that they have abilities and knowledge that we don't. Now, the older people have experience, and the young people know that and value it and want to learn it, but they don't want to learn it from people who are wrapped up in their own status, people who are wrapped up in their own superiority. They want to learn it from people of character, and we need the humility to be able to work in partnership with others who might be half our age. But we need to appreciate that a young 22-year-old can walk into your door as a recruit, as a first entry level employee. He comes with about 18 years of technology experience, which is a whole lot more than you might have or I might have. And we've got to respect them for that. And it's sometimes hard for a 50-year-old to respect a 22-year-old.
I know. It's like, as you say, I mean, one of my 5-year-old grandchildren is working on the computer. You know, it's like, go figure. I was a lot older when I started using a computer,
exactly.
But we won't go there. Now, for people to become better leaders, what would be some 1, 2, 3 things that you think people can do right now, especially for our listeners, on how they can become the leaders that you describe in your book?
First would be to look inwards, to understand that the people around you are mirrors of you. They're mirroring at any given moment. They're mirroring the energy you're putting out. And you need to be able to interpret those mirrors. See the people around you as a dashboard, and figure out if you want to change their attitudes. Figure out, look inside and see what it is that I can be doing differently. What energy should I be putting out to be getting a different outcome from the people around me? That's one of the hardest and most important steps. The second is to go deeply into what you believe you've been put here to do. What is the unique contribution, the difference you can make to the world and to others that no one else can quite make in the same way? And see how through your work as a leader in your organization or anybody that you're leading, might be your family, it might be a teacher in a classroom, a small team of people, any leadership position in which you find yourself, how can I use that as a vehicle to make the difference for which I was created?
That's powerful. And I love that expression about how we can use whatever, say, organization, whether you put that into the family context, business context, use it as a vehicle. I don't think I've ever heard that being coined quite that way, and I love that that parallel there. It's wonderful. David, I know for our listeners, they may want to reach out and learn more about what you're doing and maybe even connect with you. What would be the best way to reach you?
The easy way is through my Twitter account that I'm fairly active on, which is at David Lappin. The other two options are our two websites. There's leadbygreatness.com, which is about the philosophy and the book, and where I write my blogs, and there's a bit of comment going on. So it's quite a lot of information and making leadership challenges and issues relevant to what's going on very, very currently. So that's leadbygreatness.com. And our consulting website, where we talk about the work that we do in organizations, is at lappininternational.com. So those are the two websites, lappininternational.com for the work we do organizationally, and leadership, individual work, you'll find at leadbygreatness.com.
That's wonderful. David, I'm curious, if there's one final thought or piece of advice that you would like to give our audience on leading by greatness, what would you share with them?
I think I would say that I come from a country where one human being, one single individual, transformed a nation without bloodshed, not the kind of thing we're seeing with the Arab Spring, if one can call it that at the moment, but without bloodshed. One single individual who had spent a large portion of his life in prison brought about that change, and that, of course, was Nelson Mandela. A single human being can bring about change far beyond what anyone themselves even expect or thinks. Don't underestimate the power of a gesture, the power of an action, and certainly not the power of consistent behavior that is authentic and true and character-based. Don't underestimate the power of that to change vast numbers of people, both within your immediate influence and way beyond your influence. When people interact with each other, there's a chain reaction. We influence each other consciously and subconsciously, and that influence goes very far, is very vast, and is very big. And just go out and make a difference in every interaction. In every interaction you have with any other human being, just ask yourself, how can I make this better? How can I inspire some energy into the situation in which I find myself right at this minute? Whether you're talking to a barista at Starbucks, or to the attendant in a store, or to a member of your family, or to a team in your business, how can I inspire something into these people with whom I'm interacting to make this interaction memorable for them?
Well, David, I think you've made a difference in our show today, and we're grateful for the inspiration and leadership that you have brought, not only through sharing through your book, but also what you contributed to the world as well in South Africa and elsewhere. Thanks for being on
Absolutely.
Our show today, David.
Thanks very much to
both of you. Tune in for our next show, where Max and I will be continuing our discussion on building relationships, inspiring greatness, and creating a workplace where people can thrive. Max and I welcome and encourage your comments and suggestions. Simply go to rido.com/radio. That's rideau.com/radio, and give us your feedback. Tell us why you listen to Rido's Real Recognition Radio, and we'll send you a small token of our appreciation. We look forward to hearing from you. Thanks for listening to Rido's Real Recognition Radio. For more information about the Recognition Management Institute, visit us at rido.com. Until next time, this is Roy Sonnison and Max Brown reminding you to keep it real.
Thank you again for tuning in Real Recognition Radio.
Please join Roy Saunderson and Max Brown again next Tuesday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel for more motivational tips to help your employees perform better. We'll talk again next week.